This is the sixth day of this January 2013 Rohatsu 7-day session. And we'll take up a koan today. This is from the Mumon Kan, Gateless Barrier, and it's number 40, Kicking Over the Water Bottle. I see from my notes I haven't commented on this koan in 7 or 8 years. So the Mumon Kan koans have the main case, and then the compiler of these koans, Zen Master Wu Men, or Mumon, Japanese version, added his own commentary and verse for each one. I'll save the commentary and verse until a little later. Right now, the case. When Isan was with Hyakujo, he worked as the head cook at the monastery. Hyakujo wanted to choose an abbot for Dai Monastery, so he called together all the monks and told them that the one who could answer his question in an outstanding manner would be sent. Then he took a water bottle, stood it on the floor, and said, "Don't call this a water bottle, but tell me what it is." The head monk said, "It can't be called a wooden sandal." Hyakujo then asked Isan his opinion. Isan walked up, kicked over the water bottle, and left. Hyakujo laughed and said, "The head monk has lost." And Isan was ordered to found the monastery. So first, some biographical information on these two, starting with the elder of the two, Hyakujo, who set up this drama. His dates, basically he lived in the 8th century, 720 he was born, died in 814. He started out in the Vinaya school, studying the monastic rules and regulations. I'm reading here from Zen's Chinese Heritage, The Masters and Their Teachings by Andy Ferguson. He was said to be brilliant and learned as a young man, and he traveled to train under the great Ma Zhu. And he became one of the three most illustrious disciples of Ma Zhu, which was saying something because Ma Zhu had 139 enlightened disciples. I'm just going to pluck out a couple of these things from here. Once, by the way, Hyakujo, that's his Japanese name, it's Baijiang. Let's use the Chinese for now. Baijiang. One day he was in attendance on his teacher, Mr. Ma Zhu. He saw the abbot's whisk sitting on its stand. That's the horsehair whisk. I use it in ceremonies sometimes. Zen teachers use it in ceremonies. The one I got from Roshi Kaplow. He saw it sitting on its stand and said, "If someone uses this, can he also not use it?" It's a Zen question. How can you use it and at the same time not use it? Ma Zhu said, "In the future, if you travel to some other place, how will you help people?" Baijiang picked up the whisk and held it upright. Ma Zhu said, "If you use it this way, what other way can it be used?" Baijiang placed the whisk back on its stand. Ma Zhu suddenly let out an earth-shaking shout so loud that Bai Zhang was deaf for 3 days. It's a famous incident in Zen. Bai Zhang, or Hyakujo, is maybe most famous for having established the monastic rules of the Zen monasteries. Before him, many Zen monks had followed the Buddhist tradition, the wider Buddhist tradition of mendicancy, of the monastery supporting itself through the monks going through the community on their begging rounds. But Bai Zhang felt, the monastery hired, those other monasteries before him had hired local people to work the fields and do other work. And he had this revolutionary idea that if you're going to, there's no reason why as a monk you can't do manual labor. And then from that came his famous saying, a day without work is a day without eating. And it has been so ever since. I got a glimpse of the other system when I was in Burma in 1979 in my first pilgrimage. Burma is now called Myanmar. And we went through the most prominent of the Buddhist monasteries there in Rangoon at the time. And we were just so surprised, I and my traveling companions, Zen Center staff, were so surprised to see all these hired laborers working on all kinds of things. And of course, there are always jobs that we do have to hire out that are skilled. Here's another incident. A monk asked Bai Zhang, how can a person gain freedom? Well, we know Hakuin's answer to that from our chant and praise of Zazen. The gateway to freedom is Zazen Samadhi. Let's see what Bai Zhang says. If you attain it at this moment, then you've attained it. If you can instantly cut off the emotions of the self, the five desires and winds of attachment, the greed and covetousness, the pollution and purity, that is to say, all delusive thoughts, then you'll be like the sun and moon hanging in space, purely shining. The mind like wood and stone, thoughts spared from worldly entrapments, like a great elephant crossing a river, engulfed in the rapids, but taking no missteps. Heaven and hell can't pull in such a person. It's a great, great description of someone of deep understanding and experience. The mind like wood and stone. This means a mind that is that still, that settled. Another way in which Bai Zhang is very well known is from his challenge to some monks, where he said, "What is it?" Here's the story. He entered the hall to give Taisho. When all the monks had assembled, he suddenly leaped off of the Dharma seat and drove them from the hall with his staff. Just as they were running out of the hall, he called to them. When they turned around, he said, "What is it?" Another translation is, "What is this?" And this became a koan in its own right, a breakthrough koan, very popular in Korean Zen. A little bit more about Baizhang's work ethic. We read here that in the everyday work of the monastery, Baizhang always was foremost among the assembly at undertaking the tasks of the day. But he became very old, and the monks in charge of the work were concerned about him. They hid his tools and asked him to rest. I think he was in his 90s at this point. Baizhang said, "I'm unworthy. How can I allow others to work in my behalf?" He looked everywhere for his tools, but was unable to find them. He even forgot to eat while looking for his tools, and thus the phrase, "A day without working is a day without eating," has become known everywhere. Well, the more common version out there is that he just went on a kind of a hunger strike. I'm not, all right, you hide my tools, I can't work, well, I'm not going to eat. Right, now the other protagonist in today's koan, Isan, that's his Japanese name. His original Chinese name is Guishan. Forgive me for going back and forth all the time. I read these different sources, and some are the Japanese name, some are the Chinese name. I'm going to go with the Chinese. So, of course, he lived at the same time as Baizhang, the 8th and 9th century. And, of course, he was a disciple of Baizhang, one of the leading disciples. And with his own student, with Guishan's own student, Yangshan, he founded what would later be known as one of the five traditional houses of Zen. That's the phrase they use for the lineages. So a little bit about Guishan. He left home to become a monk at the age of 15. He too started under a Vinaya master. And then he went on to study the sutras, both Mahayana and Theravada sutras. When he was 23, he found Baizhang and became his student. And later, Guishan reached the position of the head of practice among the monks. Once when Guishan was serving as Baizhang's attendant, Baizhang asked him, "Who's there?" Guishan said, "Me." Not the most outstanding answer in the annals of Zen. This is before his awakening, which is just coming up here. Baizhang then said to him, "Stick a poker in the fire and see if there is any fire left in it." Guishan did so and said, "There's no fire left." Baizhang then took the poker himself and stuck it in deeper into the stove and pulled out some hot embers. He turned and showed them to Guishan and said, "Is this not fire?" And at these words, Guishan experienced a great enlightenment. Something that teacher could say to any student, say, when they're expressing discouragement in practice, feeling unworthy. Is this not fire? You yourself are this. And now the story that leads up to today's koan, a Buddhist pilgrim named Sima came from another province and he spoke to Baijan. Again, that's Guishan's teacher. This Sima practiced in feng shui. He used to be called a geomancer, geomancy. And this pilgrim, feng shui expert, said, recently in my province I came upon a mountain where 1,500 Buddhist worthies reside. Baijiang said, should I go there as the abbot? The pilgrim said, it is not where Master Baijiang should reside. Why is that? Baijiang said. The pilgrim said, the master is a teacher of bone. That place is the flesh. Baijiang said, is there anyone in my congregation here who could assume that position? The pilgrim said, let me see them. So Baijiang had his head monk come by, and when the head monk arrived, Baijiang said to the pilgrim, how about this fellow? The pilgrim asked the head monk to speak a few words and walk back and forth. Another version has it that he asked him to cough, which we men know can be a kind of a test. Then he said to Baijiang, he won't do. So Baijiang then summoned Guishan, and Guishan was the head cook. And the pilgrim took a look at Guishan and said, this is the abbot of the monastery, the monastery he was talking about he had come from. So that night, Baijiang summoned Guishan to his room and said, my fate lies here, but as for glorious Mount Gui, you will go there as abbot and carry on my teaching for future generations. And then, but when the head monk heard about this, he said, I'm the one who was promoted to the position of head monk. Why is the head cook going to attain the position of abbot? And that's where this koan opens up. Guishan later went on to teach for more than 40 years. And he died when he was 83. All right. And now this, back to our koan, the case. So, to repeat, when Guishan was with Baijiang, he worked as the head cook. Baijiang wanted to choose an abbot for this monastery. In another source, it describes the site of the monastery as just exquisite, just perfect in every way. And that's what this feng shui expert had been so taken with, and why he went all this way to another province to get Bai Zhang to send someone there. When we were when we had just had Chapin Mill given to us by Ralph Chapin, we all agreed that, well, first we hired an architectural firm, and then we also wanted to find people experienced in feng shui to walk the property with us and get their input as to what would be the best site for the Chapin Mill Retreat Center. And the architects, being open-minded, were fine with this. We all together walked this property. They came from Boston. They had been practicing feng shui, we were told, for 19 years. And after slowly meandering over every section of these 135 acres, they, with their compass and other simple equipment, then they very definitively said, this is the place. This is right where we're sitting right now. And they had their reasons. They said this is especially good placement. It has the protection on both the west and the north. They have their own words, the black tortoise and the azure, or something or other. And then they also said that this rise, which is now where we're sitting, it had it was the end of a dragon's tail, to use their terminology. The topography of the place came to a point here, and they said that's particularly felicitous for a spiritual training center. And then, just to seal the deal, as they had already said this, then they found a fox's den here in this rise, and they said that's also especially good sign. They also said that they were struck by the cleanliness of the water in the pond and the stream. They said that's a very good sign. What we came away from that really with the conclusion that this feng shui is a lot of just common sense. You know, you want to be protected from the west winds. You want to be protected from the north winds. You want clean water and other things regarding wind and sun and all. And happily enough, the architectural firm agreed that this was the best place for the Chapin Mill Retreat Center. So Bai Zhang hatched this plan for choosing someone who he felt would be outstanding. He gathered them all together and said that he would have a question. And then he took a water bottle, stood it up on the floor, and said, without calling this a water bottle, tell me what it is. Great challenge. The head monk came over. You could see his hands folded on his chest, which is just the standard proper posture for a monk, even outside the Zendo, and looked down at this water bottle and said, it can't be called a wooden sandal. Another translation has it as a stump. Can't be called a stump. This is not a bad response. He doesn't fall into the trap of naming it as something. But his response is a little too safe. He'd been around the block. He knew that he could get away with that, and he wouldn't be in error. No one could throw him out of the monastery for that response. But it's sort of taking safety in negation. Okay, it's not that. It's not a. Can't be called a carburetor. Can't be called a cannoli. Okay. And then Hyakujo turned to the head cook, Guishan, and asked him. And then Guishan, without hesitation, walked up, kicked over the water bottle, and left. Hyakujo laughed and said, "The head monk has lost." This is one of the points of the koan. Why did he put it that way? The head monk has lost. Well, one answer would be that the head monk could have used a brushing back after having said, "Hey, I'm the one who deserves it." This is one of the most troubling signs of someone, a candidate as a teacher, is ambition of having that grasping attitude. So this is the nub of the koan. This is the crux of it, that kicking over the water bottle. And this is what the student has to demonstrate in Doksan, showing her understanding of what Baizhang was conveying and why it pleased, what Guishan was conveying and why it pleased Baizhang so much. When I see with this koan, I think of the genius of Baizhang and who set up this contest, and I think of the words of an educator by the name of Gail Goodwin, who said, "Good teaching is 1/4 preparation and 3/4 theater." The real essential aspect of this koan is Guishan's state of mind as he kicked over that water bottle. It is no easy matter to be able to discern when a student is ready to teach. In about a year ago, I was in New Zealand doing a Dharma transmission ceremony for Mala Sensei, and gave a teisho and mentioned that the first thing that I want to see is that the prospective teacher, the student, upholds the three, what are called the three essentials of Buddhism, which is dhyana, sila, and prajna. Dhyana is meditation, shila is the precepts, and prajna is wisdom. Starting with the last, there are many Zen centers that actually don't require or expect that a teacher will have seen into her true nature. In fact, from what I can tell from now eight or nine meetings of the American Zen Teachers Association, the great majority of Zen centers in this country don't require that. But I think it's a great, great shame that they don't. Because we need to, the teacher needs to have insight. The teacher needs to have at least seen a bit into the formlessness of form. The other one, second of these three, the precepts, is of course you want a teacher who can uphold the precepts, who is someone of upright conduct. I don't think I even need to explain why. Of course, I did find an entry here in Zen's Chinese heritage that indicates that Guishan himself shared this understanding that you have to have someone of good conduct. This is what he said. He addressed the monks and said, the mind of a person of the way is forthright and undevious, with no front or back. In other words, someone who doesn't lie in any major way or sustain any kind of deceit. It is neither deceitful nor deluded, and at all times it is watchful and straightforward, never covering the eyes nor plugging the ears. Such a mind is realized when emotions do not chase after things. That's an indirect way of talking about getting caught in misconduct. All the ancient sages have simply said that by the practice of not giving rise to evil views or thoughts, the difficulties of the corrupted world become like the clear autumn waters, pure and unmoving, tranquil yet unimpeded. A person with such a mind may be called of the way, a person without worldly affairs. And then the third, originally called dhyana, the third essential that I would look for in a student is meditation, that they can maintain a practice of meditation, not just sitting meditation, but that they be able to live a life of stabilized awareness. This is what meditation really means in Zen. It's not just sitting cross-legged. Meditation means being able to move through your daily life with a mind of presence, alertness, and that is difficult to maintain without daily sitting. It would be a cause of alarm to me if a candidate, being a teacher, had quit sitting. So those are the three big ones. And beyond that, there are so many more that we don't have time to get into now. It really helps tremendously to have worked with a student closely for years. This is where you can tell so much more, so much about anyone, getting close quarters. Before Roshi asked me to take over the center, I later learned that he had, just before he had asked me, he had surveyed some leading members of the Sangha to be sure that there weren't some things about me that he may have missed. That, you know, you can be one way with your teacher, as you all know, and then you can be very different with your peers. And even though Roshi and I had worked together closely, we lived together in Mexico and elsewhere, and of course at the center, still he was took it seriously enough that he wanted to be sure that I didn't have some dark secrets that he hadn't seen. And apparently he was satisfied that I wasn't a psycho killer or something. But I found this passage in a book called The Man of Many Qualities. Is a wonderful collection of stories from all over the world, all different cultures, based on the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching. And here's one by Confucius, actually, about discerning the character of a person. He said, and this is from roughly the time of the Buddha. He was a contemporary of the Buddha, Confucius was. So about 500 years before the Christian era. Man's mind is more treacherous than mountains and rivers, and more difficult to know than the sky. For with the sky you know what to expect in respect of the coming of spring, summer, autumn, and winter, and the alternation of day and night. But man hides his character behind an inscrutable appearance. There are those who appear tame and self-effacing, but conceal a terrible pride. There are those who have some special ability but appear to be stupid. There are those who are compliant and yielding but always get their objective. Some are hard outside but soft inside, and some are slow without but impatient within. Therefore, a gentleman, this was always the Confucian ideal, a gentleman sends a man to a distant mission in order to test his loyalty. He employs him nearby in order to observe his manners. He gives him a lot to do in order to judge his ability. He suddenly puts a question to him in order to test his knowledge, and makes a commitment with him under difficult circumstances to test his ability to live up to his word. He trusts him with money in order to test his heart, and announces to him the coming of a crisis to test his integrity. He makes him drunk in order to see the inside of his character, and puts him in female company to see his attitude toward women. Submitted to these nine tests, a fool always reveals himself. No matter how discerning a teacher may be, and how long he may have worked with a student, still he can find that a student can someday bring disgrace on him. This is so common that it hardly bears comment. So it's an imperfect system. Teachers do the best they can. They consider everything they can, and then make a decision. So Isan walks up, kicks over the water bottle, and left. Hyakujo, or Baijang, laughed and said, "The head monk has lost," and Guishan was ordered to found the monastery. And now, Mumon's commentary. He has some fun here. He says, though Guishan was extremely valiant, he could not leap out of Baijang's trap. Upon close examination, you'll see that Guishan accepted the heavy and refused the light. How so? Look. Removing the towel from his head, he shouldered an iron yoke. Removing the towel from his head, this is kind of standard work gear in certainly in Japanese temples today, and apparently from the Chinese ones too, going way back to this time, where they would tie a kind of a light towel around the head, cover the head, keep the dust out of the bare scalps of the monks. And this would be especially important in the kitchen. He removed the towel from his head and shouldered an iron yoke. Certainly the job of head cook is demanding enough. But here, compared to the abbot of a huge monastery like the one that Guishan went to, it's nothing. This is a wonderful sentence here. Though Guishan was extremely valiant, he could not leap out of Baijang's trap. He accepted the heavy and refused the light. And then the verse. Mumon says, tossing away the bamboo baskets and the wooden ladle, Guishan, with a direct blow, cuts off complications. The barrier Baijang set up for Guishan didn't stop him. The tip of his foot creates innumerable Buddhas. Guishan, with a direct blow, cuts off complications. What are the complications here? This is one another point of the koan. Well, we can put ourselves in the head monk's position and can just imagine the complications. You know, we know he's showed himself as someone who was wanting the job, wanting to beat out others. So with that kind of ambition, naturally, he would be concerned about winning or losing, just for starters. Ideas of the better one, worse one, the superior one, the inferior one, possibly concerns about how he appeared before the other monks. With Guishan, bah! There's a wonderful statement by another great Chinese master, Toksan or Deshan, that comes to mind with this outstanding presentation by Guishan, kicking over the water bottle. If you have no concern in your mind and no mind in your concerns, then naturally your mind will be empty yet numinous, calm yet sublime. Guishan must have been detached from winning or losing, better and worse, and all these other concerns that the head monk probably had. He had to have been free of those. Otherwise, Baizhang wouldn't have found him so well suited to the job, so capable. The barrier Baizhang set up for Guishan did not stop him. Mumon, you could almost infer from these words that Guishan was hell-bent on getting that job. But was he? The tip of his foot creates innumerable Buddhas. Another point of the koan. All right, our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.